Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Bonna Pfeiffer.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artist. And our artist this week, Rachel Winters. Hi, Rachel.
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Bonna.
Glad to have you with us. Now, encountered Rachel on Instagram. Her Instagram name is Flora Embroidery GA. I assume that's for Georgia.
It is, yes.
Yes. But you don't have a accent, so work on
well,
that.
Well, southerners will say I definitely have an accent, but
are you
Canadian?
I'm actually Welsh.
Okay.
Ooh.
I'm Welsh born. All my family from both sides is from Wales, and brought up in the UK, moved to Canada, and I am now living in Athens, Georgia.
Yeah, I could detect a Canadian accent because you said bean and stuff.
So yeah, okay.
I was going to ask earlier, and when we were talking, but I didn't.
Yeah, many years in Canada, though. Yep.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, there it is. Okay. Yep. All right.
I'll stick a few A's in there, and then you'll.
Yeah, do that. And if you're doing a boot, that would help. Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that too.
Yeah, just throw one in every now and then. That's good.
Yeah, okay.
So, encountered Rachel because she does beautiful work, but she does the one thing that many people look at and either decide not to do or try and don't succeed, and that is she sells finished needlework. So, got to talk to somebody who's doing that. So, we have Rachel. Yay. Beautiful stuff, too. We'll get to that in a minute. So, where do you get started? Now we have to know the history because you start in Wales and go to Canada and end up in Georgia. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
That's not a normal path.
No, and a few other countries in between. But those are the primary... The primary countries I've lived in for long periods of time. So, yeah, I was born in Wales. My entire family, both sides, is from Wales. And we moved to the UK, to Britain. Well, we lived in the UK, obviously, but we moved to Britain for 6 years. And my dad at the time was a captain at sea, and he got transferred over to Vancouver, Canada. Oh. So we all moved over as a family when I was 10. And I lived in Vancouver for many years, 20 years. And then in the meantime, I'd spent a lot of time in New Zealand, Australia, and Europe. But I eventually met my husband in Italy. And in Tuscany. And we got married. And he's a New York Italian. And he had been living in Athens, Georgia. And so here we are. I've been living in Athens, Georgia now for about 10 years.
Holy smokes. Wow.
So I think that people often ask me how, you know, what I'm influenced by. And I say, well, a variety of different things, really. So, yeah.
In Vancouver, I've never been to Vancouver, but everything I've heard is that's a beautiful place.
It is. It's very beautiful. Yep. I really loved living there. Yeah. A little expensive these days, but it's beautiful and you can do a lot. But I've really like living in the South now. Every year that goes by, I actually like it a little more and more. So quite happy here. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, Georgia's nice. A little humid for my taste, but yeah.
Yeah, Athens is a nice town. It's a very artistic town. A lot of artists here and music, and it's a good town.
That's that's interesting when that happens. Because recently Vonna and I were in Weaverville at Sassy Jack's, and artists there, Asheville and Weaverville, artists everywhere there. Those towns are so interesting when they're basically made up of artists.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's, I mean, that's where my business took off because I started selling locally at the markets here, the holiday markets, and I still do that. And, you know, my business started from starting in Athens, so it's been good living here.
Yeah, and that living in a community like that, a lot of inspiration too, I would think. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Definitely. And my husband is a designer, and so you know I do give him a lot of credit because my background, as we will get to, is not art, And so I give him a lot of credit in the early days of really teaching me about design and lines and color. And, you know, we just talked about all that stuff. And so I definitely see his influence in what I do as well. So it's helped a lot.
That's great to have a sounding board like that, that
right.
helps you right. along. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So where does the needle point, where does the needlework come in, the embroidery come in? Is that something you did as a young, or is that also something later in life?
It's later. I mean, I have memories of my mom doing a little needlework. That generation did a lot of, you know, needlepoint, it seems. But I wouldn't say that it was ever an influence. You know, I saw it, my mom knitted and did a little needlework, but nothing that I would say really influenced me at a young age where I did it because of my grandmother and my mother. I don't think that's was my path. I think that it never really stuck with me at all. But one thing that did happen for me when I did live in Vancouver, I was working in a corporate job at the time. I did for about 10 years. And I was just feeling like my artistic side was dormant and I wanted to do something and I wasn't sure what. And it's not really in the arts, so to say, but I started doing massage therapy. I went to school and did massage and, you know, I was single at the time, had a lot of time on my hands, and I started working part-time in a spa and I did massage therapy, and that didn't work out for me. But through that process, it was strange. I did discover that I loved working with my hands, and I always joke around, that's the Welsh in me, you know, we're just like, oh, very hands-on. But I did really notice that there was something about my hands. I really liked, I always noticed that about me. I like getting in the dirt and really feeling things. And so I think that I did discover that. And so it was strange when I started sewing, it was like, it made sense for me like to do handwork. And so I do think that massage actually sort of helped in my, my journey towards sewing. Yeah.
Just kind of brought it out of you.
Yeah. It did, yeah. It's just like I don't like the massage, but I do want to do something more with, you know, whether it's building or, it felt like a natural fit. And embroidery for me has really been a very natural process. I have not felt in the 11 years I've been doing it that it's ever felt forced. And so I definitely feel like it's, something that's true to who I am and what I want to be doing, yeah. Which is a nice feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. What started it? Did you just pick it up as something to do with your hands and see if you liked it, or?
No, I just, Brian and I, one year we were, you know, what are we going to do for Christmas this year? And it was, maybe I'll make a felt ornament for some family and friends. So we made both of us were doing it at the time. We made some little felt birds, stuffed them. At the time, for some reason, we loved birds. We had birds around our house, little decorative birds, and flowers too. So we made these little felt birds, and then I started getting a few people, hey, could you make me one? Oh, those are so cute. You know, could you make me five? You know,
here we go. Here we go.
And that is exactly how it started. The next year it was like, hey, could you make me 10 of those? And it just became something. And then Brian sort of like, after the first year, was like, okay, I'm going to go back to my job. And, you know, at the time I was, you know, fresh in Athens and didn't want to go back to a office job. And I was like, you know, I think I'll just do this for a while and maybe get something part-time job. And it never happened. I've been doing this for 11 years now. And I've been blessed that it's been able to be my job for this long.
Yeah.
So it's been my job and it's been my creative passion. So to say, yeah.
Right. Gives you both. Well, and you still do the felt ornaments.
I do the felt ornaments and I sell them. I've been selling them for a long time. And I last year was the first year that I didn't make any and I just was selling some old ones. But this year, this summer, I got back into it and I've made some llamas and some bunnies and some dogs. And I have my regular customers who come back every year and what's new this year. And I'd be making my felt ornaments I sell them every year at the holiday market. So, and I love, for the most part, I love making them still. So,
yeah. So, and those are, I want to say almost a folk art look that you have to those.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just, fun. When I had my daughter too, we decorated the tree with felt, you know, we didn't want the glass on the tree. And, you know, so it's a little bit of a selling point too. You know, it's just something different than a glass ornament, but I think it's just, you know, I create them, I design them, and, people buy them. I keep selling them, and it's just working. I keep saying, as long as it's working, I'll keep doing it, and it keeps working. And so I keep doing it, and I think, well, maybe this will be the last year, and it, it never really is. And I just love it. And I did do, hair clips for a long time as well, for many years. So I did sell those in a lot of retail stores. So I did the retail thing for quite a while. I sold, wholesale hair clips. Mm-hmm. and felt ornaments. And so, yeah, I did that for a few years.
Yeah. And corporate job and then working at home, I used to have to go to an office too. And well, Vonna had to go to a corporate job too. And I'll tell you, we were, talking just, my wife and I were talking just the other day, the thought of having to go back to an office. No, thanks. No,
right.
We work from home. Yeah. It's
right. It's a different world. It's different, but you know, I am in my working years. So, you know, like I said, I'm lucky that this can be my job right now. So I'm sort of at a place where as long as it's working, I keep doing it. This has been a little bit of a different year for me. And so I'm not sure what next year holds for me, but I'm just kind of, doing what I want to be doing right now each month, and then just taking it from there.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to re-rack your business a little bit, got accounts hacked on you and went through that mess.
Right. Yep. That happened a year ago. Yep.
Yeah. That has to be unpleasant. So that was your Instagram account and...
My Etsy store and my Instagram. And I take a lot of responsibility for that because I never used to log out of Instagram. And I think at the time I had my Etsy store open and I didn't have the, what's that called? The notification, double notification on my Instagram, the verification.
Yes.
And so I didn't know anything about that even. I was just going along for the ride on Instagram for a long time. And then, you know, I hit 100,000 followers on Instagram. And the moment I hit 100,000 followers, everything was hacked. And not only was I hacked, but I was getting blackmailed and all kinds of stuff. So it was a challenging time. I think that I was posting on Instagram frequently, and then suddenly that all stopped. And it really took me back and kind of gave me an opportunity over that spring to reevaluate what I was doing. I think I started to kind of like have an opportunity to look at what I was doing a little bit differently rather than being so entrenched, so deep in it. So mm-hmm. I was really busy when that happened. So it was my busy season and it just sort of came to a grinding halt.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's just it. We don't think about that infrastructure stuff until it's gone. And then it messes right. up your whole system. Yeah.
And I had built a lot of great relationships on Instagram that changed overnight. So some of those people they never found me again with my new name, or maybe just faded off because I'd been hacked or different reasons. But that was hard too, because I had a nice thing going on Instagram for a while and some nice connections. So it was a tough time. Yeah. It was kind of tough. And so this year's been a little bit different for me.
Yeah. You said something that caught my ear. You never logged out of Instagram.
Right.
I never do. Is that something that the Instagram people are recommending?
Well, I'm just assuming, you know, I believe that I was hacked through my private messaging on Instagram because I used to get a lot of messages through Instagram. And when I was hacked, the person who sent me a message saying, you know, we're the ones who hacked your account, they came up as a name of someone who had pretended to be a customer of mine.
Oh.
So I'm assuming somehow or another, and I don't know how. I don't really know how Instagram works that well, but I assume they were able to get in through my direct messaging, and they were somehow to be able to put something in there. And as soon as I hit 100,000, I'm assuming that they hacked me, unless they are watching me that closely, which I can't imagine they were.
Yeah,
I think they had some kind of like system in place that they took over when I hit a certain number of followers. But it was, so now, you know, I don't really respond to direct messaging unless I can, if I get a direct message, I'll go into that person's Instagram page and I'll confirm they're a legitimate person. I'll even look at their photos to make sure that they're a real human being. And before I will even respond. And most of the time I don't respond to direct messages on Instagram anymore because of that reason.
Yeah. It's a good subject to talk about because I know I never log out or do anything with Instagram, and now I'm going to go change my passwords just because I haven't done it in a long time.
Right. And, yeah, I never did that either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I for a while I was making a regular practice of doing that. And now that you bring this up, I think I need to go change them because it's been a while. And
right.
you just take that for granted. And
right.
In and out throughout the day on your phone, whatever. And yeah, you never know who's watching or doing what. That direct messaging is interesting too.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's exactly how it worked, but for me, there was a red flag there where I wasn't sure. And so now I'm just careful how I interact with people on Instagram.
Yeah.
I think that you have to have, was it on your phone or iPad that this happened?
My phone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a takeover of my phone just this last week. And I believe it came through Facebook on direct message. I didn't have the two-factor authentication. So
right.
now when you get in my phone, you have to have my fingerprint for me to get into my phone.
Right.
And, so anyways, how I knew that they took over, we were in bed and I hear my phone. There was something going on with my phone and it was somebody making a call to our cable company, or not our cable, our Wi-Fi company, Comcast. And they were trying to get into our account because the lady on the, it was, you know, like how when you call those companies, it says, push one for this or that. And they were trying to get into our account. I'm certain for money reasons. And I immediately turned off my phone. I picked it up like, what is this? Did I accidentally push a button when I plugged in my phone? And I was like, I saw that they had written stuff on Facebook. They had texted a couple of people in my iMessages, and then they were calling people, you know, from this, you know, the Xfinity. So anyways, I turned it off immediately. And when I turned it back on, I did the two-factor authentication and all of that stuff. And I have not had one problem ever since. But I believe that it came through, you know, like somebody that looked like a little old lady that wanted to follow me on Facebook. And it wasn't a little old lady that wanted to follow me on Facebook. So I have been very careful as well about direct messaging. And if somebody sends me that stuff that says, put your finger here, and if not, you're going to get killed in 13 days. You don't forward it to 100 people or whatever. I block them on direct message, and I will do that from now on. If anybody sends me that stuff, I'm going to block you on direct message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It was, I have all that two-factor notification verification and, but it, you know, I had the same thing. You pay up this much money, we'll give you your account back. And, they unfortunately went into my Etsy shop, too, and started taking money out of my Etsy shop contacting all my Etsy customers. So anyway, it was a bit of a nightmare. I got it all back. I straightened it all out and changed my Instagram from Rachel Winter Sewing to Flora Embroidery GA. I got Flora Embroidery as well, but I had to change it again for another reason. So so anyway, it did pass, but that was a year ago now. So.
Yeah, it's the time, you know, not only your business, but the time it takes to get things straightened out is incredible. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our fair warning to everyone segment
right
there.
Right.
Yeah. Two-factor authentication and change those passwords.
Yes.
And the other thing, the magazine I edit is a manufacturing magazine. And one of the biggest issues and something we cover constantly is cybersecurity, because people just sit around all day long trying to break into factories and shut them down. Or if it's a chemical factory, you know, change turn valves and all kinds of things, because everything is connected. And it's, you know, I messed that factory up for the day, and, you know, and they can do it. And so cybersecurity is just a major issue, and it's become, for manufacturing companies, safety is always the top issue, always. But I would suggest these days that cybersecurity is top issue 1A for those reasons, and because it's dangerous. And and it trickles all the way down and to us as individuals, and those same practices that I tell people through the magazine, you know, you gotta stay on top of this all the time. And then I look in the mirror and go, yeah, but you don't.
And, right.
You know, practice what you preach, because it is. It's changing passwords. It's not using the same password for every stinking account you have. It's making the passwords difficult. And these days, you can't put in a simple password. It's just not allowed anymore. But one article we did a while ago, they said the most dangerous piece of electronic equipment is the jump drive, those little sticks. And they say because people will walk into factories with one of those because they've been working at home. They'll take stuff home, work, and they'll bring it and they'll plug it into the system. And that's usually, it's a big portion of where problems come, viruses and people getting access, because something was on someone's home machine, got dumped onto the jump drive when they were using it, and they plug it into the system. And, you know, the warning is don't use those things. Don't allow them into a factory, because invariably they're going to, you know, eventually they're going to cause a problem. And, it's sad, but all this stuff that we have to be wary of it all the time. And, and as soon as we're done here, I'm going to go change my passwords.
I think I should change mine again too. Talking about it.
Yeah. It's, you know, and I do things like I'll have a password with numbers on the end. And so then, I'll change it and go to the next digit, like 204, I'll go to 205. Or I have one password where I'm working my way along the characters at the on top of the number keys. So, the, you know, the asterisk and the at sign, and I just work my way across. You know, I try to keep it simple, but still, you know.
Gary, are you trying to get hacked?
No. I was going to say, I should write this stuff down. Okay, so he's got 205.
Trust me.
204, 205, and then start doing the characters.
That's right. No, trust me, the passwords I use, you'd have to hurry to get me. But you know, little things like that you allow you to at least remember. And then I have a software in my phone called The Vault. It's an app, and it's set up just to store all those things. And it's very handy. And so all my passwords, usernames and passwords are in there. And you have to, of course, there's a login just to open that up. You know, so you can't just get into the phone and then get into that. But then the thing I like about it is how, you know, if you stop using an app, it's still running or it's still open in the background, whether it's running or not. This shuts out. Yeah, you have to actually reload it. And, I use that to store passwords. And you can categorize them and you can back them up. And it's handy for me anyway.
So. Does it cost? Does it cost money?
No.
Well, I'm getting Vault as soon as we get off this.
It's just, and you can file things in folders and do all kinds of things. And I'm sure that there's a backup, you know, ultra easy backup that you pay $2 for. But I've not had a use for it. But it's just a good place to store them, because then it allows you to have different passwords for everything and not forget them. And like with the magazine and magazine online stuff, and then Fiber Talk and then personal stuff, I've got a lot of passwords. And mm-hmm. so I just put them all in there, and that saves me, when I forget one, I know where to go to get it. But No, it's this is important to talk about. Is people need to be aware, and even if it's not your business, if you're not doing a business, at least to protect your own materials. And and how many people have income taxes and other things on their computers? And you don't want people getting into that. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, back to stitching. Right. So how is it that you end up doing embroidery of botanicals? I mean, it isn't just flowers. I mean, you have all kinds of things. How do you migrate to that?
Well, this hasn't been going on for very long. I don't know. What are we? 2 years ago? Maybe 2 years ago. It was just a couple years ago. I did a fair, and I hadn't been selling online at all, and I started playing around. I used to make hair clips that had little flowers on them, little girls' hair clips. And when I was doing some felt ornaments, I started just putting a few little designs on white felt. So I would maybe stitch a couple flowers just for something different. People started when I made an ornament and it didn't work out, I would sell it as a one-off. And people started, well, do you have any more one-offs? And so I started making these little one-offs for the year a couple years ago, and they sold right away. And people were like, oh, I'd love to see more of these. And I think that I'd been doing the felt work for, 8-9 years. And it would run its course. I was really getting to the point where my hands were getting a bit tired, and I was running out of ideas, and I didn't know what I was doing anymore with it. I felt like I had sort of done everything I wanted to do in the retail market. I wasn't really sure what I was kind of doing. And then, so I remember sitting down at the kitchen table after I'd finished those markets and was like, I need to do something different. And I love flowers. Flowers have always been my thing. And I had this idea of doing paper flowers. I wanted to make something still. And I thought, well, that's not a good thing, because, it always rains at these fairs, and, how am I going to load those into boxes? And so I thought, I don't know about paper flowers, because I bought this amazing book on paper flowers, actually, a few months prior, and I was looking through it. But it got me thinking about something different, and it got me thinking about flowers a little bit more. And I think it just started slow. I think actually, the people who hacked my account deleted almost a year's worth of photos on my Instagram. So a lot of those photos of a lot of work that I did is no longer on my Instagram. But I did start very slowly. I went to the craft store and I bought some basic, material for maybe even the cross stitch material, like anything. And I think I just put it into a hoop, and I thought, let me just try something. And I think at the time I was surprised by people interested in my work on Instagram, because I was just sort of posting on Instagram. And then I started getting into doing a little bit more of the landscapes. And that's when things really changed for me, when I began doing some of my landscape art. And, that's when I was like, well, maybe I'll just put it on Etsy, see if it sells. And it sold, and made another, and it sold. And it kind of went from there. And the botanicals and the flowers were just a slow process. It was really, people ask me a lot how I do this. For me, it just doesn't come magically. It really is just practice and work and patience and continuing on and making a mistake and doing it differently. It's really just continually doing it. And then, as long as I'm feeling inspired, I mean, I think for me, art has to come from a place of inspiration, but it really is just, I see the differences of when I started and now it's changed a lot. So, it was a couple years, but it quickly changed for me. When I started doing embroidery, everything kind of moved in a different direction, but it has, in a way, being a slow process, because I've been doing it for so long. So it's, Instagram really changed things for me, though. definitely. Yeah.
Well, you certainly have an eye. You know, even if you don't have any art background, there's just, to me, there's certainly an artistic talent behind this, because everything you do is in a hoop, so you're confining yourself to a circle.
Right.
And you just, there's a, you know, there's a balance, there's all the things that you look for in art, and so that's all your, all on your own. So you, it's obviously a genetic problem then.
Yeah. Well, I just, I definitely, you know, I think, I usually stitch freehand. So I don't really ever, I don't do a lot of drawing, and I don't do a lot of planning. Most of my planning might come from, I have a gazillion. I'm a bit of a thread hoarder. Like, really, I have so many threads. And so I,
oh, Rachel, meet Vanna. Vanna, meet Rachel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am someone who goes into the thread store, you know, anywhere, and I will, my eyes will light up. So I,
yeah,
you know,
Rachel, meet Vanna. Vanna, meet Rachel. Yeah. That's how that works. Mm-hmm.
So you understand. So I work with color a lot. So I'll pick out my colors sometimes. But it's all freehand pretty much. And I think I mentioned to you about the idea of making kits and patterns. That sort of led me in a different direction for a while, the drawing part of it. But I think I've come full circle back to kind of, and I think maybe through what happened with the hacking, I think that it's been in a positive way, it's kind of gotten me more aware of the direction I might want to go in the future and what really I want to be doing. Sometimes I find it's a little easier to get sidetracked when it's also your job, or has been for me. And so I can only do what I'm doing if I'm passionate and inspired by what I'm doing. If I'm not, then I'm probably not going to be doing it. That's just my experience. But so I have to be a little bit more in touch with that for myself and be aware of what I want to be doing. So
these designs, you're just stitching them right out of your head then?
Pretty much. I mean, I definitely, well, not, I mean, definitely the Italian landscapes are definitely, you know, I can say after living in Tuscany for a year that I'm sure I'm inspired by my year of living there and being in the Italian markets and looking at Italian tablecloths and all that. Well, I mean, definitely the poppy fields, which was one of my first landscapes I sold, and with the villa, little villa, the Italian landscapes. Those are definitely inspired by living in Italy. Some of my mountain scenes are definitely inspired by living in Canada and New Zealand. So definitely it comes to my head, but it's really just an experience that I've had. And I definitely, you know, I like to think that I put a lot of my heart into what I'm doing. So it is sort of inspired by my own experiences, and it's just putting it down instead of on paint or paper, it's just putting it down, or writing, it's putting it down with needlework.
Cause I love the botanicals, but I love the ones that look like you've just taken a picture of a field.
Right. Yep. That's what I call my landscape ones. And, that was really the big turning point, I think, where I realized, you know, my art was selling.
Yeah, well, it would. And there's so much dimension. And you, so you taught yourself, I mean, because these aren't just flat threads on linen. I mean, you have right. French knots and all kinds of things. So you're looking for dimension and to express yourself more, than you're teaching yourself all of these stitches.
Yeah, I learned a lot on YouTube stitch work. That's primarily, you know, I did look at some books, but I did find it, I'm a bit more visual, so I did find it easier to learn my stitches from YouTube videos. And I, there was one person that taught me a lot on YouTube, my stitch work, Mary Corbett. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yes. We know Mary, yes.
Okay, so she has a lot of really small little videos about stitches, the basic stitches. And I always tell people that's how I learned most of my stitches. So she really taught me how to do my stitches.
You're amongst many.
Right. So she's great at teaching, I think. And so I learned how to do a lot of stitches. And then I do like to change some of my stitches sometimes. And like the French knot. I've kind of gotten lately been doing this loose French knot for my flowers. And but yeah, I just, again, it goes back to working with my hands. Like people say, how do you do that many French knots? And my hands just really enjoy doing it. I don't get tired so much from sewing. And so I just, doing that many French knots, I enjoy it. That's actually my favorite stitch, is the French knot. And some people find that stitch hard. So it just depends on what you like. I love doing them. So
a lot of people flat out hate them. So.
Right. Yeah, I know. And that's my favorite. So it's strange. I don't know.
Tell me about the loose French knot. Cause that you really get a nice dimension out of those.
Yeah. I'm just doing a French knot. And then instead of pulling, the thread tight, you let it hang kind of loose. And then when you're pulling it through, you let your, you just let it kind of unravel, and then you just sort of layer them up a little bit. Okay. And so it almost looks like petals. Like it, I don't know if you've seen my 3D flowers where I cut and brush. Have you seen those bouquets? I really like working with texture, and I've been doing these 3D, I don't even know what you would call them. It's just 3D embroidery, I would call it. But I'm making big stitches. I cut them and I brush them so the threads come apart.
Yeah, and it's almost like stump work.
It is similar, yeah.
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 And so that's what you're doing there, is you're making big loops, cutting the ends,
yeah,
and then...
I'm doing big loops. I'm cutting and brushing with a hairbrush. playing around with my stitches. I really enjoy playing around with stitches. I think that's the thing. I was, opening up a different conversation about patterns and kits. I did go through a process where I would have so many people ask me, and I wanted to create these patterns because people would often ask me for patterns. And, you know, my background is in business and, actually sales and marketing. And I was like, well, I could do these patterns and you sell them. It's a great, because it is my business too. It would be a great opportunity to do something different. But what I found I was doing was I was having to draw and create or make a hoop and then photocopy it and then, get my light box and trace it and all that. And what I found was I was losing, even when I recreated it, I was losing something in the art of it. Like I was losing, for me, something in the whimsical, carefree stitching that I really enjoy doing. Hmm. That's what I really loved doing. When I do my botanicals, what I connect the most with is sort of this carefree, easy layering stitch work. So I think a lot of people are really good at doing very precise pattern work where they recreate. But for me, I don't find it that enjoyable. It's a lot more enjoyable for me just to throw in a 3-inch stitch and a 1-centimeter stitch all in the same stem or something. I mean, that's probably a little long, 3 inches. But the idea of just being really doing whatever you feel like, it, rather than saying, okay, well, you've got to do this stitch for the stem and you've got to do this French knot has to be one wrap and then you do the 2 wraps up here. I just didn't find that enjoyable. So I found another way for myself to make money doing what I love to do, and maybe not doing so much right now of the pattern. I don't know if that'll change, but right now I definitely enjoy freehand work more.
Okay. See, that helps me understand then why you don't have kits. Because it just saps the fun right out of it when you try to actually explain
work.
What you're doing.
It becomes work for me, and there's a part of me that says, well, if I want to work, I'll go get a job. So, uh-huh. So I want to really be doing, I do have a certain amount of time in my day, and I want to be doing something right now that I want to be doing where I feel like I'm moving forward in what I want to be doing. And I think that I really admire people who can do kits and patterns, but I'm not sure that it's the right fit for me. And I've tried, I did have a couple patterns out. I don't have the equipment, to be honest. My scanner is fussy and it doesn't scan in sometimes correctly. And, I don't have Illustrator or anything like that. So I'm taking photographs of my stitches to explain people. And I'm not, I know it doesn't have to be perfect, but there is a part of me too that isn't quite sure that I'm explaining it well enough for people. And so I think that it just doesn't, for what I'm doing it for and how long it really takes me, I'm just not sure it's the direction I want to be going in. So,
well, you're probably not getting, you're not probably getting paid enough to do all that you're doing either. I mean, you know, the patterns and kits even for a large, or is a very nominal fee for the amount of work that goes into it.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, to sell those, you have to sell a large gross of them before you see any rewards from it. And I think that that's, you know, that's a huge, you know, drawback for that sort of business, is that to get any kind, you spend a lot of tedious time kitting, you know, getting the threads together, cutting the fabric or whatever. And then on top of it, you're photographing step by step how to do a stitch. I understand that because I do tutorials free for finishing, and I understand how much time it takes to create one. And when you're doing that for multiple stitches on a kit, I can understand you would never compensate yourself enough to recoup the time that you, and the energy you spent. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. And I would rather honestly give away my patterns for free if I was going to do that and have fun with it. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right.
Just enjoy it. Like if you're stretching the fabric and it doesn't look quite right, well, you just figure, you know, you can figure it out if you're a stitcher.
Right.
The idea of selling a pattern, to me, I feel like I want to give people what they're paying for. You know, cause patterns, you know, you sell them for a certain price, but you're like, well, someone could go out and buy a book for that price. So it's like, I want to give someone something that's valuable. And maybe I also don't feel like what I'm able to offer right now is enough, you know, cause I, like I said, I like to do a lot of layering work. And so I want to, but it's also a little harder to explain sometimes how to do it. And that's why I'm saying some people who have a little, I think when you dedicate a lot of time to doing it, I think that it can become this thing that you do, but I think you have to want to really do that and continually do it. Like there's some really great people on Instagram. I'm, you know, I could name a handful right now who I know do patterns and who are great. I mean, they show a photo of what they're offering for a pattern. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. I've never actually stitched someone else's work, so I'm not sure how that is, but you know, if I was wanting to stitch someone else's pattern, I would definitely buy things online. I just don't, I'm not sure why I've tried many times to go in that direction, but I often come back and find that it's not the right fit for me. So, I'm just, you know, going with what I feel is the right thing.
Right. And it's not your passion. That's how I understand.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I understand completely.
Right, right.
It's just not your passion.
I hesitate saying it's not my passion full stop, because I do think things can change. Mm-hmm. But I know right now, and I've tried it many times, that it just hasn't worked for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not willing to put in the resources or maybe the time right now. I would prefer to be doing art, and I would prefer to be doing, if I'm doing it still for my job, then there are other ways that I'm making money right now that I can continue making, you know, continuing it being my job. So
right.
It's not something that I need to feel like I need to be doing.
Right. And I think with your look, it's almost like embroidery fusion. You have several different types of embroidery in one piece of your art. I mean, it's just, what don't you think, Gary? It's like embroidery fusion. There's stump work, there's embroidery, you know, surface embroidery. There's all kinds of different things in your, I've never seen anything look the way yours look. And to say that you've just been doing it for 2 years, my goodness, that's to me is incredible.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. I think it comes quite naturally, and it's something I really love doing. And so I don't really think about it too much. I just really enjoy it. And I, you know, I'm not a painter. I'm not a knitter. I've tried knitting. I don't really enjoy it. This is just something that really clicks for me, and I love it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and see, that's what caught my eye, Vonna. You're right. That fusion thing, because you expect to see straight up surface embroidery, and then, all right, this is stump work, but no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nice mixture, but Rachel, you have a way of putting texture in that I think is just captivating. And,
yeah.
And
thank you.
your use of color, and it amazes me. But see, it amazes me, You're not the first one that we've talked to that doesn't have an art background, but clearly has an artist's eye.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, you know, there's a, it's, they're laid out nicely. They flow visually nicely. You know, every one I look at, my eye travels the whole thing and the whole scene the way it should. It doesn't just focus on one thing, but there are focal points. So I have a starting spot and, yeah, I just enjoy looking at them, which is why I wanted to talk to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's, I love doing it. I'm sometimes I'm surprised how much I like doing it and how much I've enjoyed doing what I've been doing. So, like I said, I'm really focused on the art part of it right now. I definitely am very appreciative that it can be my job. So I have aspects of my business right now that's definitely part of my work, where I am able to earn money. But I think going forward, I definitely am focused a lot on the art aspect. And I'm excited about that. I haven't been excited for a while. This summer's been a bit flat for me. And so I'm very excited. I'm feeling more excited about what's to come now. And now that I have a bit more clarity in what I don't want to do and what I do want to do, I feel like I'm moving in a positive direction. And so it's a good spot. I think I'm in a good spot right now.
So what's the process on these things? Do you select some colors? Do you start with green stems and just let it come from there? How do you go about creating these? And folks, I'll make a slideshow on the page for this podcast so you can see her work. But and of course, the FlossTube video will have it, the photos in there so you can see her work. But yeah, how do you go about that? What is...
Okay, so I love linen. I use 100% linen. And right now, the linen that I usually use isn't available. So that is another thing that's been bothering me this year because I get, you know, I've enjoyed working with this linen so much. So I'm looking for a good linen. I've been trying ordering online and... So I prefer 100% linen because I love the look of it and the texture. I feel like it gives a nice background for what my garden or my meadow is going to be. So that's the first thing. I pick my linen color. And then I think about probably, am I going to be doing like flat embroidery, surface embroidery? Am I going to be doing a little bit more with texture? I think I do think like that a little bit before I start. I've been drawn a little bit more to like the greens and golds lately. So I will sometimes in my mind think like, okay, what color palette am I using? Am I in a bright mood today? Or am I in a soft pastel mood? I definitely stitch based on my mood. I think sometimes I really enjoy these bright colors and then other times I enjoy something more neutral. And so I'll sort of have an idea of what color palette I'm using and I'll pick a few colors out. And then I might pick like a flower that I want to start with. For example, like if I was to do one today, what's been going on for me lately, I might do a big sunflower. So if I was doing a bouquet, I might do a big sunflower. And then I would probably put in one of my Queen Anne's lace in there, or I would do a couple weeds. I tend to like weeds, you know, I do a lot more wildflowers. I definitely am drawn to wildflowers and the whimsical, playful nature of the wildflower versus a planted flower or, you know, a rose or anything like that. So I definitely throw in some weeds and wildflowers. And that's what I do. And then I just look at the space, what's left and height. And like you said, it just, you know, I used to stitch a lot. I'd put it out like arm's length and I would look at it from a distance and, you know, maybe something a little shading, like, you know, dark, something a little darker or a little, sometimes it needs a little pop of color. And I just go from there. And it really just is a process of like, I think like a painter in a way, you just like, well, what else does this need? Maybe a little bit more greenery, maybe a little more on that side. And until I kind of like it and it becomes just a little, like a little painting, but thread painting. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I don't really have a process.
No, that's okay. See, that's that's okay. That's.
I don't draw a lot on it too much on the linen. I use a water soluble blue clover pen sometimes. Years ago, or when I first started, I would use this disappearing pen, which I sometimes wouldn't disappear properly. But now sometimes I do draw the outline of a, if it was a larger flower, I might draw that in.
So, and the hoop, you use the hoop, obviously. I mean, that's easy as a stitching tool, but then you just mm-hmm. retain that.
Well, I think it started with my landscapes. I think when I had these long stitches that I would use for the grass in my landscapes, and the stitches were quite long, like a couple inches. And I did sell a few of these, and I had a couple people ask me, well, can you just mail it to me without the hoop and I'll frame it? And so I took it out of the hoop and the stitches would loosen a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that, you know, that's not a good idea to take them out of the hoop, especially these like small 4 or 5 inch hoops, because the stitches will loosen. And then I didn't really know what to do with them. And I started to sell them online or on Etsy. And I didn't really, I think they're quite affordable, what I sell them for. And so if I was to take them out of the hoop and frame them, get them mounted, I would be looking at a different price point. I think part of it, I was like, not sure if my work was as valuable as what I would have to charge someone. But I think I had a system that was kind of working and people liked them in the hoops. And I think, you know, I'm sure a lot of people do sell them in the hoops online, but I think it worked well. And so I've just been selling them in the hoops, and I pick up frames along the way, and at markets, I do frame a few pieces and put them in frames. And I sell some clothing that I stitch on at the markets, but for the most part online, I just keep them in the hoops and sell them like that. I'm not quite sure what else to do with them yet. I don't know if I want to go into the framing part of it. So I'm not,
probably not. That's,
probably yeah. Not. So that's, yeah. So right now I just sell them in the hoops. I back them with felt and, I just ship them out like that.
So the way you present them, that's the hoop you stitched them in then. They never leave. Okay.
When I show a hoop on my Instagram, that's how it would come in the hoop like that. So, if someone wants to take it out of the hoop when they get home, I know people put them in shadow boxes if they want to keep them clean. But you can just hang them on the wall.
Yeah.
In the hoop. I have some nice hoops that I ordered from the UK that, I sometimes work with as well. So I have not just the bamboo hoops, other hoops as well.
Yeah. And then the process of producing enough to sell,
mm-hmm.
is that what you just keep piling them up, just create them and pile them up, and then.
Well, I think that's what happened. I mean, I think that's what happened last year. I was on this process of like producing, and then it came to a standstill. And so I sold what I had last year at the holiday markets, and so I started fresh this year again, and. I feel fortunate that it was like that for a while. I just would make and sell, put to my Etsy and they would sell. So I've been doing that for quite a while. I don't have anything in my shop right now. I do have hoops made. I'm not sure if I'm going to put them back on my Etsy shop this year. I'm going to have a few for my holiday markets I do here. Yeah, I've just been selling them primarily in my Etsy shop and the holiday markets, and they've been selling fairly consistently. So,
yeah, and then one of the questions that comes up when it comes to selling finished needlework mm-hmm. is how do you get enough money for the time that goes into them? It sounds to me like you're pretty fast at putting these together.
Well, I'm not, and people think I am.
Okay. All right, so you're normal then. Okay.
I think I'm probably, I mean, I might be a little faster because I may be a little faster than some people, but I don't know, if I'm going to be perfectly honest, I don't think I necessarily make money doing hoop work. I do make money doing other things that I feel sort of offsets it a little bit. I think that's what I've been going through this process this year is, am I creating one of a kind pieces, or am I creating pieces and then recreating them and selling them? And that's a big difference. if you're making a pattern and you're just making five of them and you're just selling them on Etsy as finished pieces, or you're selling them in a market, it's very different than creating one of a kind pieces, because my one of a kind pieces have a lot more work in them. They have my inspiration. They have my thought process. They have, you know, they're a lot more work. And I'm not just selling the finished piece. I'm selling what I like to think of as my art too. So to me, I have gone through a process of understanding that it's okay to recreate certain pieces and sell them for a certain price point. But I think that I'm going to be a little bit going forward. Things are going to probably change a little bit as far as my one of a kind pieces that I create. Because I don't have the time to do that so much anymore. And, for the price point.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that really answers the question. I think that, I don't make a lot of money selling hoops. I do make some money selling my hair clips, my ornaments, my jewelry. I can do that because it's smaller pieces. So I look at it like that. I can make some money in one area.
Okay.
But I don't know if I think you make money if you can recreate, maybe, but for art pieces, it's hard. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's why we have the phrase starving artist.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, I'm lucky that I can have this as my job. I do have areas of places where I can sell my work. But some pieces I do put a lot of time in, and maybe I don't get the money back what I could. But this year I haven't really made a lot of pieces for that reason, that I don't have as much time to, I think I want to spend a little bit more time working on my art and pricing myself a little bit higher and feeling that if it doesn't sell, it doesn't sell, rather than that needs to be what I want to be selling.
Yeah.
I want to focus a little bit more on the art side of it rather than creating it to sell it, I think.
Well, see, I think that's the dividing line. There is exactly that. Am I kind of a semi factory, or am I creating art? Because at some point to make money with this stuff, yeah, you have to just sit down and crank them out.
Yeah, I do that with my ornaments. Like I said, that's one of the reasons I felt like a factory. You're right, and it was like I had them all lined up, and I cut the owl beaks, and then I cut the the bird wing, and I had it all little system going on. But I do have, like I said, I'm lucky. I have areas where I can make money, so I'm not so focused on that as much. I think I've become less focused on hoop work because I want to shift towards artwork. And I don't know if that makes any sense to you. I just feel like I don't want to necessarily do embroidery anymore to make money. I like using my embroidery to make like my necklaces and my keychains and things like that, that maybe I can keep my business going. But I think that I think I lost a little bit of my passion for embroidery for that reason. I was working, I was sewing, I was selling, and then I was feeling like I was running out of ideas in a way, like, oh, what am I going to be doing next? And I realized that I somewhere along the way, I lost doing what I wanted to be doing. I remember a time where I started moving into the birds, and I would do cardinals and, you know, a yellow warbler, and I was really enjoying it. And those are the pieces that I priced higher because I was like, well, if they don't sell, they don't sell. I don't mind. I love this piece. I'm going to price it a little higher because I spent my time doing it. And they actually did sell, but I've spent less time doing that and more time creating for it to continually going on. And I've actually stopped doing that. So that's my hope for next year, is I can spend a bit more time creating and being okay putting my price point a little higher based on what I want to put it at. And then if it doesn't sell, it doesn't sell. It's not a need to sell it.
Right.
If that makes sense. So,
It makes perfect sense. I understand completely.
Right.
What you're saying.
I just don't want to lose. I don't want to lose the passion because it becomes too much of a job. I just want to.
Right.
Exactly.
But see, that's that dilemma of turning, people do it in any hobby, turning your hobby into a business because it looks like you can make money. And then you discover you're spending 80% of your time being a business and 20% of your time doing the part you love. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When does that continue and when does it stop? For some people, it doesn't matter. And for others, it's like, I can't hardly stand this because I'm not stitching. And yeah.
Yeah. I think I stopped doing that probably at the beginning of the summer. I think I said, you know, I'm making a shift here. And now I'm just, you know, getting some things ready for the markets. So that's keeping me fairly busy. But I haven't really created much art, I would say, since the beginning of the summer. So mm-hmm. I've been actually not really doing anything for quite a while and not missing it and not wanting to, and not in a way that I'm done with it, but in a way that I just feel right now I don't need to. And so I think maybe... And I think there's a process too, which I have a hard time with, where there's a period of creativity and a burst of energy. And then it's sort of the resting lull, you know, where you just have to rest for a while and do some other things that are a bit more just not so much mundane, but you just carry on doing. And then the urge to create again comes. And sometimes I think that it should always be there, but it's not always there. And I think I'm getting okay with it just being like, now I'm working on my jewelry for fairs, and then, I'll be doing that for, you know, maybe a month. But I know that, you know, I'll probably be over the Christmas holidays when the markets are done and no one wants to buy anything, that I'll be like, oh, I'm going to create what I really want to create is this big meadow with a bird in it, or a couple birds. And I've been thinking about this for a while, but if I feel like I have to create, I probably won't be able to create it. So I'm just letting it just happen a bit more organically than maybe trying to, I think I was trying to move it along at a pace that I thought was the right pace. And now I'm just letting it go a little bit more to be what it's supposed to be.
Oh yeah. I agree 100%. And I'm mm-hmm. sure Vanna, same, you've experienced it yourself, Vanna. Just,
yeah.
You try to force it and the fun and creativity just gets pushed out. That's why I just refuse to stitch anything that has a deadline on it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because yeah. that's just hanging over your head the entire time. And it becomes work, and
yep.
you know, and once it becomes work, I'm not doing it.
Just, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think but you actually hit exactly where I'm at. I think that something about this became work for a while, and I'm just wanting to move it away from, like, it has to be my work to some degree, because I've made the choice for this to be my job. So right. I have to, I know if that makes yeah. sense, but when you're,
no, it does, it does.
You know, so I've made that choice for it to be like that right now. So I have a certain amount that has to be dedicated to the working part of it, which is fine. But I think that when it became 100% of my work, and I think that I want it to be like 50-50, mm-hmm. 50% I got to put in to my work to continue it being, you know, that it's able to be my job right now. And then 50% to just let it be the art that I want it to be. Mm-hmm. And if I can have that balance for me, that's perfect. That would be the ideal way to go into 2020 next year, you know that I have to do a certain amount of work to continue doing this. And then I can let it be art as well. And I, you know, again, it's really just based on who buys my stuff and who wants to see my stuff. And, you know, as in someone who's creating art now for this long, I definitely have this understanding that it is a blessing to be where I'm at. And I think that, you know, next year I could be working at a job and I might not have any creativity. And that's not in a negative way. It's the truth that things can change. And so I really do take it as right now, I just feel very lucky to be doing what I'm doing. And then we'll just see what happens next year. I think that this happens so organically for me. I'm open to it either continuing or something else will shift. And maybe a year from now, embroidery is not my thing. So I don't know. I really am at a point in it that I just feel like I'm either like, where do you go from here? I don't know. How do you move forward with embroidery? I don't know. It's kind of this thing. Well, it can be art. So that's kind of, yeah, it's an interesting time to be doing what you love when you're at a time in your working years, and you, it's finding a balance. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Rachel, this has really been a treat. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for making the time. Thanks to everybody for listening.